Stuff that changed the world.
The mobile phone.
The internet changed the world.
Penicillin, I would have thought.
I would say sanitation.
It changes everything.
Simon Tierney joins us once again, and it is one of those odd ones, Simon, because you kind of, it's a bit like that old saw about the first person who milked a cow, what were they thinking? The first person who used lipstick, where did that idea come from? It's a bit of a puzzler, really.
Yeah, it's hard to pinpoint an exact date. However, from the great study of archaeology, we know that the earliest lipstick or artifact of lipstick that has been discovered was from, unsurprisingly perhaps, Sumerian culture. Queen of Ur, 3,500 years ago, Queen Shubad. She was buried with a cockle shell full of, I suppose for want of use of a better word, lip paste, really. Mm. Of course, lipstick as a word, as a term, only came into use in the very late 19th century. But it is something that has been with us for 5,500 years.
My word.
A very long time.
And say when your ancient Sumerians were putting on a bit of lippy, was that like going out to the club or was it just for burial purposes?
No, it was she certainly wore it on a day-to-day basis, because we know that because she was the queen, she influenced her court and others to follow suit, and indeed neighbouring Assyrians. Mm. This would have been made with tallow, which is animal fat. Animal fat exists for a long time in the history of lipstick, added with wax and crushed red gems, red stones, in order to get that rich red colour.
So that involved a lot of labour to make this, I assume.
Huge amount.
I assume she didn't do this.
Very expensive, and yeah, only for the wealthy, indeed. Things move on then. When we go to Egypt, we see the employment of red ochre. Of course, plenty of that sort of clay in Egypt. And that would have been mixed with a resin or a gum. And also we see the introduction of one of the most important ingredients in the history of lipstick, and that is carmine. Now, this is something that I'd never heard of before, but carmine is a powder that is taken from crushed cochineal. I had to look up what a cochineal is, but you know the way we have woodlice in Ireland?
Hmm.
Little grey fellas with lots of legs.
Yeah.
Well, this is what a cochineal looks like, except it's a blood red colour.
Wow.
And it exists in South America and indeed in Egypt. And these are crushed. And their scales, which are red in colour, were powdered down and mixed with resin and then slicked onto the lips. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rather disgusting.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to really think where that came from.
And of course,
yeah,
you know, it would go rancid. You know, the history of lipstick is hilarious, because before the 20th century, they didn't have fixatives. So if you were kissing someone, it was going all over you.
Mm.
And it was often made with animal products. So after a few hours, it would start to smell. You'd be like, what is that smell? Oh, it's my lipstick. So it went rancid, particularly in a hot climate. So you'd have to change your lipstick quite regularly. Now, Cleopatra was obviously a major icon from sort of 50 BC, died in 30 BC, as far as we know. She was a big user of this carmine. Whenever she's depicted in popular culture, she always has these deep red lips. You know, you think of kind of Elizabeth Taylor playing her in that famous movie from the 60s. You know, that is based on some sort of truth. We know that she did wear this sort of red lipstick. Now, everything changes in ancient Greece, Sean. And the reason why Greece is really important in the history of lipstick is because it's the beginning of a very long timeline of regulation in lipstick. I never knew this before I started studying it last week, but at that time, prostitution, both male and female, was perfectly legal in ancient Greek society. But if you were a female sex worker, it was incumbent upon you to wear red lipstick at all times when you were working. And the reason for this was because it was about, the law wasn't about protecting women. Unfortunately, these laws never are in this area. But they were about protecting male customers from the sin of deception. Because it was thought that if sex workers were soliciting work, soliciting business, that they might try and not wear lipstick so that they would look like a lady. Mm-hmm. And therefore be less conspicuous to a customer. So it was very, very important that they wore red lipstick. Therefore, high society did not wear red lipstick at all in Greek society.
Oh, how interesting. And was that the only significance of a particular colour of lipstick? Or
just
were there different
red
colours for different
just
things?
Red lipstick, yeah.
Oh, wow. So then, like, if we then go into the kind of the Dark Ages and more kind of, I suppose, if you like, Puritan times, did lipstick and makeup in general sort of die away a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. This is what comes up with cosmetics in this slot a lot, Sean, over the years, is that in the Middle Ages, the church plays a crucial role in suppressing the use of these sort of cosmetics, particularly lipstick and makeup, because in the medieval church, it was seen as trying to fix God's work, that the face wasn't good enough as it was. Now, what women did get away with in some respect was that a very light kind of lily or rose tint would be allowed to put on the lips so long as it was very subtle. This was used, this was made using sheep fat and some sort of root vegetable. I'm talking about beetroot or radishes, kind of mashed together with some animal fat and then slapped onto the lips. Doesn't sound too subtle, but there were certain categories of women who got away with this.
Yeah.
In British and Irish society in medieval times. Apparently, the two groups that got away with it were, one, women who had been physically disfigured. They were allowed to wear makeup.
Okay, yeah.
And secondly, in the confession box, if a woman pleaded with her parish priest that, in fact, she needed to wear makeup and lipstick in order to not be seen as hideous by her husband, in order to make herself somewhat attractive for him, for his needs,
yeah,
then the priest would have some sympathy for her.
Okay, my word. I would imagine, though, even when, you know, the hoi polloi were not using lipstick, that the royal family would have used it all the time.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. The Elizabethan period, it really kicks in. And of course, we're creeping up into the time of Henry VIII when, you know, the church was pretty much disregarded anyway.
Yeah.
So Elizabeth I, she obviously famously wore this kind of white lead ceruse makeup, which eventually killed her. And one of the reasons why she wore this makeup, she caked it on so much. Every portrait we see of her, she's wearing this strikingly white mask on her face. She literally did put on her face in the morning, is because she suffered with smallpox and her skin was incredibly scarred. And she wore this makeup to cover up that. But she also wore this cochineal red lipstick. It also had gum arabic, egg white, fig milk, and cinnabar. Again, another mineral rock that I hadn't come across before, Sean, but cinnabar contains mercury. And
you may remember
from a few months ago when we were discussing the history of the mirror.
Yeah.
That was one of mirrors were
yes!
a big killer
yeah.
because they contained mercury. It had that reflective quality. Well, lipstick in the Elizabethan era also contained mercury, and her lips were also slowly killing her. Apparently, when her corpse was found, when she died, that there was almost a half an inch of lipstick caked onto her face. That's an incredible rig of makeup that she had on. Absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah, no, but there were periods as well where men, we're talking about this exclusively in a female context, but men used to powder their faces and bits during...
Absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
Their
particularly
in
the 18th century,
yeah.
It was perfectly normal for a dandy to have white powdered makeup and indeed white powder in his wig as well. There would have been lipstick used, of course, in order to make a contrast between the lips and the face. However, in the 19th century, that very much dies out. With the Enlightenment, we always see in any sort of fashion. We see this sudden disregard for prettifying men in any way.
Mm.
This is in terms of clothes and also in terms of their cosmetics. It's about men kind of employing this new sense of enlightened rationale and logic and these sort of ideas where the prettifying nature of 18th century culture is completely disregarded. And from the 19th century, lipstick is very much just the preserve of women.
Right. Okay. Now, so when we get into that, when do we get into the era of commercially manufacturing lipstick?
Yeah. So the earliest date I could find is we're talking the mid 1880s, Sean. Some of the listeners, no doubt, will be familiar with the French brand of Guerlain. That's G-U-E-R-L-A-I-N, a very famous lipstick and makeup company. They were one of the first to commercially manufacture lipstick. Their first ever lipstick in the 1880s was made with grapefruit, beeswax and butter. Sounds more like breakfast than a lipstick. But that was among the earliest. Now, in terms of the technology, I was looking at some lipstick tubes the other day, and they're wonderfully simple little devices. But I was wondering when they first came about. So in 1915 we see the development of the first tube, kind of rigid tube that lipstick was put in, and it very much becomes lipstick at this point, as opposed to the lipstick which had previously been available in a pot. He invented a contraption where the lipstick sat on a little shelf at the bottom of the tube, and then there was a hole, a kind of a slide lever going all the way up the, so you could lift up the shelf to bring the lipstick out as you used it. But what really made the lipstick what we would recognize today, Sean, 1923, James Bruce Mason Jr. of Nashville, Tennessee, he patented the world's first swivel tube for lipstick, which is, of course, is what is still used today.
He must have made an absolute fortune.
Absolute
that,
fortune. Yep. He patented it. Yep.
Yeah. Hitler hated, the item wouldn't be complete without a mention of Hitler, of course, but yeah, Hitler didn't like lipstick.
After years of searching, Sean, I finally found something that myself and Hitler had in common. We both hate lipstick. I really don't like lipstick at all. On the very few occasions in my life where I've had the privilege of kissing a woman, it is always difficult to not come across as offensive as I scrub my mouth to try and take the lipstick off my mouth. I don't know what it is. It's the texture of lipstick.
Well, lipstick is what you object to, rather than women wearing
it. No. Wearing it is absolutely fine. Women can do as they please. As a result, I've basically stopped kissing women.
Yeah, okay. And a loss to women.
Though, yes, indeed.
This text here, best invention ever. I assume this is from a woman. I don't go anywhere without it. Even at night, I wear a clear lipstick that's essentially a lip balm, but in a gold lipstick case. I just feel so feminine with it. The advantage women have over men is that you, me and two women could go to the pub and drink ourselves into next week. And the next day they can get up and look exactly the same. Well, we look like bald shite, basically, because we don't have the lipstick option. We don't have the makeup option.
Yeah. You bring up an interesting other point, actually, in terms of drinking, because I've heard anecdotally that when a barman or a barkeeper gives a cocktail to a customer, they will often leave the straw out of the glass for a man, because men, when they drink from a cocktail glass, we don't leave a lipstick mark.
Mm.
But they will often keep the straw in for a female customer, because trying to get lipstick out of glassware, even with a dishwasher, is extremely difficult. And that's why many glasses in pubs, even when they're washed, you'll be like, oh, there's lipstick on this glass. But it has been washed. It's just the lipstick is impossible to get off.
Ah, yeah. Okay, good point. Simon, thanks so much. Fascinating as ever. Simon Tierney there. We're going to take a break after that. Registering to vote.